that time again.
Ha ha! Sing it up. Ugh.
Oh, it's coming back. Oh, I like
that. Oh, it came back. Oh, I like that. Yep. Yeah. It's a little bit louder now.
Mm.
A little bit softer now.
Man, we're going to have to record some new music because I can't not listen to that the whole time.
No, I just jam.
Yeah. It gets me in the right mood, though.
J-A-double-M.
Two M's.
That's how much a jam.
That's how much of a jam you're getting into. Is it safe to say it's a groove?
Oh, it's a raspberry groove.
Did you get it back, though?
No. My groove never left.
Never left you. That's the best kind of groove to have.
But I see where you're going, mm-hmm. and I appreciate that you're asking me, because it shows you care.
Well, I mean, I just want to know what's going on with you.
Can we not do this on the podcast?
I mean, you want to stay closed off, it's fine. I just think you should talk about your feelings.
I don't have feelings to talk about.
No feelings.
Well, I like to keep them muted.
Yeah.
As muted as possible.
You take something for that, or?
Take a little rest.
Yeah.
Take a little relaxation.
No pharmaceuticals?
I can't handle pharmaceuticals.
You don't dabble in the prosium?
No. Oh, my gosh. No. My anxiety would run away with me.
Well, that's the point of it, isn't
no,
it?
No, but I'm anxious about medicine.
But, oh, I see. So the anxiety about the medication.
Yeah.
The medication can't address the anxiety about the medication. It addresses every other kind of anxiety, but not medication anxiety.
No, not medication anxiety.
That's weird.
Yeah,
it's a really specific mechanism of action.
They're studying me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're doing some clinical trials?
Yeah. It's me, Woody Allen.
Okay.
And Matthew Broderick.
And Matthew Broderick, our old friend Matthew Broderick.
Yeah. We're in the same trial.
Yeah. I feel like that's maybe going to skew their results a little bit.
Well, who else are they going to get?
Someone with less just palpable anxiety, maybe?
I mean, what do they got? They got, like, on the other side, just for control, they got, like, George Clooney.
Yeah, he's pretty cool.
Like, cool as a cucumber.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the other side of the pillow. R.I.P. Yeah. Stuart Scott. That was the thing he came up with.
Yeah, I believe you.
Yeah. I really like that guy.
Stuart Scott?
Yeah. Do you know him?
No.
Me neither.
ESPN was not part of my package growing up.
Fair enough. Mine either.
I hear he's a good guy.
He was. He was the best kind of guy. But let's not talk about that. We don't want to talk about feelings in the podcast.
I don't need to talk about my feelings. Look, podcast, off podcast.
Yeah.
Anywhere. I mean,
just keep them bottled inside.
Yeah, when I got married, mm-hmm. they were like, "Do some vows." Mm-hmm. You were there, and
I remember. I think I remember that. It was at a country club.
Yeah, they were like, "Do some vows," and my wife went into this whole thing about like, "Oh, love, 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 blah, blah, blah. You know, you're my everything. I don't know what I'd do without you."
Mm-hmm.
All of this sort of silly stuff.
Yeah, like greeting card stuff.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and I went, you know, You're good.
But that was
my vow.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, I think it was a hot day, and I don't think anybody would admit it in the crowd, but they were like, "Let's get in there. Let's get to that reception."
Yeah. You know? Yeah, that's what they want.
He said what he needed to.
The people don't want emotions.
No. No. They can cry inside in a climate controlled environment.
Oh, please.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Kept it short, sweet.
Yeah.
Move it on.
That's the best way to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, in general, pretty much everything is a little too played out, if you ask me.
Ugh, you know? Really? Yeah. I mean, sometimes I'm listening to something, and I'm like, just get on with it already.
Yeah.
Enough.
Yeah.
At some point, you have to know when the bit is over.
Right. Like
I don't know what that point is.
Yeah. But like, yeah, I mean, just, I don't know. Like, I was thinking about this, you know, and like, who came up with a 1 hour drama?
It's a good question.
It's not a rhetorical question. Who came up with the 1 hour drama?
Yes.
That's the right answer.
The band Yes came up with the 1 hour drama.
No, I'm just saying, you know, like, it's too long. Like, sometimes, you know, you don't need all that emotion in there. You could do it 40 minutes, half an hour, you know.
I mean, with commercial breaks.
Commercial breaks,
get
credits,
down to 22 maybe.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I just think it's just too much.
It's a lot.
It's a lot.
It's a lot of drama.
Yeah. And sometimes, you know, like, some things are just impossibly long, you know, like in a physical sense, like some snakes.
They are impossibly, you can't even measure snakes. They're so long.
I know. And they coil around, which makes it really hard if you've
it
got
makes
like
it
a ruler.
Difficult. Yeah. Well, know? Or if you just got like one of those tape measures that like if you have like a sewing one.
Yeah, then you're okay.
Those are really flimsy, right?
That was what they were originally created for, was snake measurement.
Well, snake measurement, I believe you.
But then it was just the snakes were so long that it was like people were carrying around these big coils and they couldn't really do it.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, like what else? What other kinds of things? You got like conga lines. Those can get a little too long. Ugh,
conga lines take forever. And you know what? Everybody's emoting usually because they're at weddings.
Yeah.
Blech, gross.
Trains. Trains can be long.
Trains can be long.
Yeah.
Riding in trains can be long.
How was I thinking about trains?
You probably heard that song.
Drops of Jupiter.
Yeah.
Good song.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it's about at all, but...
It's a girl in a coffee shop, I think. That's what I got from the video. Drops of Jupiter in her hair. And she's making the coffee.
I don't remember that verse.
It's hidden.
Okay. So you have to play it backwards.
Yeah.
Put it on your record player.
She's making them coffee. She's making them coffee.
You know that guy with the you know, just speaking of long tangents, the guy that sings in that song is like really old. Like when that song came out, he was actually like in his late 30s or something like that. And it was sort of like all these like teenage girls were fawning over this song. And I just envisioned them going to the concert and be like, oh,
ugh,
that's who's singing this?
Ugh. Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. Trains, man.
Trains. There's a lot you can say about trains.
Yeah, there is. If you had to, let's just say ride out,
mm-hmm.
you know, the apocalypse, you could, there's ways, worse places you could do it than in a giant train that endlessly circles the earth.
Sure. You could be in a boat.
Yeah.
Or you could be in an aeroplane.
Yep.
Or, an automobile.
There was a movie, like, I think there was a movie that captured all of those. What was it? John Candy was in it. Was it Uncle Buck?
Rookie of the Year.
Okay, Rookie of the Year. That's right.
Yep.
Yeah, because there was they had that really complicated. They had
well,
to
they
go
had
to
get
game.
from one coast to the other.
Yeah, and you can't do
really
that
quickly
without using at least four forms of transportation.
Yeah, that's how it works.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Did you see the Snowpiercer?
I did.
Yeah. Yeah, it was on Netflix.
Yeah. Speaking of trains.
Speaking of trains, that's what you know. Trains.
Apocalyptic trains.
Yep. Sci-fi thriller.
Yeah.
Got some traction. Yeah.
Okay.
This all last right. summer, everybody was saying, oh, did you see
did
this
you
movie?
See Snow? Yeah, everybody said it.
Yeah. And I mean, who doesn't, like, when's the best time to release a post-apocalyptic story about a train set in a world that's covered in ice than like the dead center of July?
Sure.
You know?
Because people can really relate.
Absolutely.
They're like, I'm stuck in this theater and the air conditioning has been going for 3 months straight.
Yep.
And I am freezing to death.
It's a 3D sensory experience.
Yes.
You know? Like if you're in an IMAX watching this, it's like you're just basically on this frigid train.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it is.
And you know what? I mean, I bet this train didn't even need a refrigeration car because...
Nope.
Yeah.
No, they just opened the door.
Yep, exactly.
Refrigerated. Froze. Frozen.
Yeah.
Let it go.
Let it go indeed. So Snowpiercer.
We did watch this.
Right, yeah. It's Captain America is fighting his way through a really long train, and he's trying to make his way to the end of the train, and all the while being thwarted by the White Witch.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's some other people that are there who keep like saying, "Hey, do this for us," or whatever. And he just says, "No, I gotta forge ahead." And then he gets to the front and he's just like, "It's not so special."
Yeah, it's kind of sums up the movie a little bit. Yeah.
No, in all seriousness,
did you have that sense though when he get so again? We're assuming our listeners have.
If you haven't seen the movie, the film, including the end, please do yourself a favor if you don't want it spoiled and turn this off and come back to it later.
Yeah, yeah. So, end of the movie, he gets to the front of the train. I actually did have that moment where I went, "Oh yeah, he's there." Well, now what?
Yep.
And I think that was like a really powerful thing in the movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, it gives him the option essentially, right?
Yeah.
You can like do what you're going to do, or you can just let things go on being the way that they were, because what else are you going to do?
Right. Because there's nothing else left for you.
Did you find yourself, so like, you know, it's a very surreal movie, obviously.
Yeah.
Lots of crazy stuff happening. Lots of lore of people doing this or that or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. This whole history that's built up.
Yeah. We're going to go by this place where these people got out once and they froze, mm-hmm. and we're going to see their bodies. Did you ever think that it was like all some sort of weird illusion or like...
Oh, no, something. I didn't think about that.
Yeah, because I had that.
I took it all on face value.
Oh, okay. See, I think it was so strange and surreal that I was going...
Because it's like this endless loop of sameness, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And just like, you know, like they're going through a car that has an aquarium in it and it's in the middle of a tank, like a train, right? Right? And I'm going like, either this is like a heavy-handed allegory for something, which it probably is, mm-hmm. now after viewing the film, or... He's going to like get up there and find out that this all actually is just some sort of weird illusion.
Yeah.
And that there's actually some other place out there for them to go.
Yeah.
But it's the main problem with most of these, you know, sort of post-apocalyptic wasteland type scenarios is that you're only with the protagonist for a while until the point you realize that like they got nothing else.
Yeah.
They're going to get to the end and life's still going to suck for them.
Yep.
And it's not going to get any better.
Yeah. He didn't. I mean, what did he achieve?
Other than killing a lot of people.
He basically killed everyone on the train, right?
Yep, yep. I mean, it was interesting. We could belabor that. I kicked that horse till it was well done.
Yeah.
But I think what's maybe more important here is the general sense that the stylistic qualities
of
this movie.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's what stands out here.
Yeah.
I was just thinking earlier today, as I was reflecting on the movie, that there are huge plot holes.
Yeah.
Like, gaping. Like I would not forgive that in most movies. And yet, there's something about this one.
Yeah.
There's something winning about it that allows for it.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I agree. And I think that when I was watching this movie, I had the thought that, wow, this is really Korean.
Oh, really? I haven't seen enough Korean films to say so.
And then I realized that the director had also directed a couple other movies that have gotten some acclaim here in the U.S.
Uh-huh.
He directed The Host, a movie called The Host,
okay.
Horror movie. He directed a movie called Mother, which also was gotten a little bit of traction here. It actually reminded me the most of Old Boy, the movie Old Boy, which if it ever, I haven't checked to see if it's on Amazon or Netflix. Real weird movie. Lots of strange things happening, very violent, but like some of the scenes in it are intentionally campy, like these really violent scenes where people are fighting.
Mm-hmm.
There's that one scene in particular where there's this shot where he's going down like a hallway fighting these guys with a hammer. And it reminded me of the scene where he's fighting the guys with the axe.
Okay.
You know, in the train car.
Yep.
Like, where it's just like this impossible, like, large number of people that he's having to fight his way through. You know what scene in this movie stuck with me? I know I'm bouncing all over the place here.
That's okay.
But what scene stuck with me in this movie was the fish. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, where they open the fish.
Yeah.
and then they mark their blades with the blood of the fish.
What for?
I think it's just their ritual.
Yeah.
You know, to...
But that stuck with me.
Also, why in this train is there a whole society of X-Men?
Exactly. I know, they're trying to portray, a structural hierarchical society, which I think is an effective allegory with a train.
Definitely.
Right? Where you move from like the
you move from back the from the back to the front.
Yeah,
right.
And really, if you watch this movie, and this is not my original idea, this is someone else I've seen talk about this movie before. The movie is always about him making decisions about whether to go forward or backward.
Yes.
And the camera always keeps it so that he moves left to go forward or right to go backward.
Oh, interesting. I hadn't thought about that, but that's definitely true.
Yeah. So it's a very effective use of the... You always know which direction the train is,
yep,
is, and you always know which direction he's going, because every single scene where he's having to make a decision to go back or go forward... He moves one direction or the other based, mm-hmm, on, which is very important from a filmmaking standpoint, but also just like from a storytelling standpoint is really interesting.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's really cool. The style of this movie just worked for me. I think Chris Evans is great.
Yeah.
He's a good actor,
mm-hmm,
you know, and he plays noble really well. That's why he's a great Captain America.
Totally.
He has this thing in him.
Yep.
That like embodies that,
yep,
nobility. If we could, I would like to talk about some of the gaping plot holes.
Sure.
Let's just start from the back of the train and move forward.
Okay, sounds good.
So they get through these doors.
Yep.
With really like the sort of ingenuity.
Yeah,
I liked it a lot. It's cool. So they get through the doors. That's fine. And then they reach a compartment where people are sleeping in like morgue drawers.
Yep.
Basically.
Yep.
I don't understand. I mean, the guy is like the lock engineer, right? The gate engineer.
Yes.
The
guy.
Yep. Mm-hmm. But he just sleeps in these drawers. They just keep him, like, do they move him back and forth throughout the train when they need like a door fixed or something?
He helped design the system.
Right.
But I got the sense that they sort of thought
it's not really maintenance.
As, yeah. But they saw him kind of, yeah, exactly. And they saw him kind of as dangerous. So they sort of just,
right,
like he was in like containment.
Right.
You know,
okay.
You know, and
yep.
So they were breaking him out. It was,
yeah, but
like
they didn't want him to. They didn't want to put him back in the back to incite more,
right,
revolution.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. I see that.
Yeah. Like, you know, tonight there's going to be a jailbreak somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Somewhere
in this train. Yeah.
Probably
in the jail.
Probably in the
jail car.
Yeah. Put a star next to that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. There's that. All right. So then they move forward and they get to the. They get to the guy making the goop.
The goop guy.
The bars, the protein bars.
Yep.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And they look inside the tank.
Yep.
And it's all these disgusting bugs and stuff.
Sure.
What did they think that this goop was made out of?
I know.
They're like horrified by it, but...
Wouldn't you just assume it was people?
I just assume it's bugs.
I didn't assume it was people.
Yeah.
I'd just been like, oh, they're just like picking people up. Because in every, you know, post-apocalyptic movie...
Right.
It's like, what's the worst thing that happened? Oh, you got to eat your own.
Well, and as it turns out, that's the worst thing that happens.
Exactly.
You know, in this movie. That's so then you get to the bugs. All right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fine. And you get through the door.
Yeah.
Whatever. And somewhere along the way, they picked up enough of these hallucinogenic rocks to keep the guy going, the guy and his daughter.
The key master.
Yeah. The daughter, whom I didn't realize was the daughter until like... right at the end of the movie when she says something like dad.
Yeah, they have kind of an odd relationship.
Yeah.
That's common in Korean movies too, actually.
Okay.
I don't know why, but there's always ambiguous relationships. I don't know if they just know, if there's more assumed knowledge among
Korean
film audiences.
Could be. It could be a
cultural audiences.
Thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So they get through the first couple of cars and I'm like, I get it. What they're doing makes sense.
Yeah.
Then they reach this car with the X-Men.
Yep.
You don't survive that car.
No, exactly.
Like, nobody survives, though. Chris Evans does not survive this car.
Agreed.
It doesn't make any sense. It's the Peloponnesian War.
Yep.
It's the Battle of the 300.
Yep. Like, Thermopylae.
They have blocked off this very narrow space, and they should be able to just pick them off one by one because nobody else has blades.
Yep.
Right. And yet they survive the first battle with the X-Men, because there's two battles with the X-Men.
Yeah.
Right? They survive the first battle.
Right.
And then here's what's real confusing to me. Like, you see the battle filmed, right?
Yeah.
The car's very narrow. But then anytime there's a battle, the car gets real wide.
Yep.
I think.
Yep.
It's how are they fitting that many people in there?
Well, and that's why I'm saying that this is...
it's like a dream or something.
Yeah, it's so surreal. If it's like it gives you a chance at each point to check out of reality. Like,
yeah.
Or to check back into reality.
Yeah, yeah.
And it just keeps going, and you're like, oh, okay. Like, how much weirder, how much more, like, unreal could this get?
Sure.
And it turns out to be a lot more.
A lot more. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I struggle with that because I not knowing going into this, I actually did not know anything about this movie going into it when I first saw it.
I knew very little as well.
I just knew, like, there's this movie, it's made by a Korean director, it has Chris Evans in it, it's like a sci-fi post-apocalyptic thing about a train. Didn't know anything else about it, and I was like, I'm just gonna go see it.
Right.
And I went and saw it, and I was like, kind of like you said, I didn't know what to expect going in it, but I was happy with the result. Like,
yeah,
I was like,
yeah.
I came out and I went like, oh, that was pretty cool.
That's satisfying.
Yeah, I didn't make like a big deal about it or anything. Like, I think people were really like all over this movie.
Yeah, I think a little too much.
Yeah, but you know, I also to some degree, I get a little bit. I think it's weird to say something is overrated because I think like. A movie like this,
yeah.
If you ask your mom if she ever heard of Snowpiercer, she'd say...
She's never heard of it.
Right. So it's only overrated among a small, like, cabal of, like, people who really care about these types of movies.
Don't you also think, though, that there are movies that, like, maybe not so much like this, but more movies that kind of... what's the one that had... So it came out a couple of years ago.
Okay.
It's the Inception.
Oh, yes.
So okay. Inception a couple of years ago, right?
Yep.
I wasn't a big fan of that movie.
No, me either.
But I think that maybe this movie, maybe the people we were hearing this from, similar to Inception, where they're just so unfamiliar with science fiction that this blows their mind.
Okay.
I felt that way about Inception. I felt like all the press that it got was because the masses went to see it, and they're so unfamiliar with science fiction, as opposed to guys like you and I, who like were like raised on it.
Right, exactly. We've
seen all the tropes.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I know. I could see that. I hadn't thought of comparing this to Inception, but that's a pretty good. It's an interesting comparison.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think this is cooler than that is.
Oh, absolutely.
This is like significantly more cool. And I think that's why I'm forgiving it all its. And I like your idea that it gives you these idea or these chances to check in and go, "Oh yeah, this is just sort of a weird movie thing." Like, well, there are moments where it's like where it verges on the point of like absurdist comedy, too.
Totally.
Like that school teacher?
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
Played by HBO's The Newsroom's Allison Pill.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I completely agree. And I think that that's actually... Okay, two things that you just made me think about this movie. One is the difference between this and Inception is that this movie doesn't care if it makes sense to you.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't.
Yeah.
Inception, along with a lot of other Christopher Nolan movies, I'll even mention Interstellar... spends most of the movie trying to explain to you why it makes sense.
Yeah.
In Interstellar, maybe it makes a little bit of sense. In Inception, it actually doesn't make sense.
It like doesn't work.
If you're paying attention.
Yeah, it does not work.
It doesn't make any sense at all.
Which is the whole reason I don't like it.
Yeah.
This one, I think you're right. I think what they did is they said that there is one thing that's got to happen That thing is very practical. Yep. This guy has to move from one end of the train to the other end.
Yep.
That's the one thing. And then everything else around it is supporting, so we don't have to worry so much about it.
Yep.
Which is, that's just clear storytelling.
Yep, I agree. I think this is much more about the emotion, as mm-hmm. much as you dislike them. It's much more about the emotion.
Hate them.
And the humanity of it a little bit.
Yes.
That sort of, you know, in any circumstance when you feel as though you're being oppressed, regardless of how little it will get you, you'll rail against that.
Yeah.
Right? And that's kind of what this is like. That's why it's so like disappointing when he gets to the end, is because you realize like it was kind of all futile in the first place.
Yep. Like, because he gets to the end and he's like, let's say he does figure out a way to get those kids out of the gook that they're like working on and manufacture something, which is another huge plot hole.
Sure.
Have this brilliant engineer and he can't cobble together a few bits of pipe to like get the gook out.
Yep.
Meanwhile, you got like the artist guy when he's back in the back of the train has like a whole pulley system to get himself up and down his his bunk. But so let's say they do figure that out, like, and he says, you know, we're gonna make this train an equal society, like we're not gonna have a front and a back, we're just gonna be the train, you know, and everyone's gonna get the same rations, the same whatever, you know. Like, even at that, their whole existence is this 20 car train or 17 car train, whatever it is, for the rest of forever, unless you buy into the theory that the Earth is warming.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it's a very flimsy promise, if anything.
Yeah.
I you mentioned the card number, train numbers. I did become at some point in the movie obsessed with trying to figure out how many cars there are.
Yeah.
And I think I came to some conclusion that there were like 100 cars. Like there
you
are
think
a lot
so?
More.
That many? Yeah.
Yeah. He doesn't go through as many of them, but like if you watch some of the cut scenes of the outside of the train, there's a lot of them.
Yes. The sniper.
Yeah.
How did he get behind them?
I know. You can't go outside the train.
Right.
Because you go outside the train, you'll freeze like immediately.
Yeah.
Right? They've established that. Yeah. But I think the biggest part of it is that if you try to make sense of it, you've already lost.
Yes.
You know?
Like, yeah. And I think that's the thing. Like, I was trying to make sense of it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, the focus was so clear.
Yep.
That it just didn't matter.
Yep.
Just didn't matter. Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting movie. Definitely, I think, has the opportunity to be a divisive movie to those who see it. But I'm glad I saw it.
I really liked it as well.
Yeah. So I think I was pleasantly surprised to see it being on Netflix.
So quickly after it came out too.
It was very, it's been, I mean, we're covering this now, but it's been on since the fall sometime.
Yeah.
And it only came out in like July.
Yeah.
So I think that this is probably more common with this type of movie too, where they want to ride a little bit of that popularity, and if it's February, maybe people have forgotten about the movie.
Yep.
And so if they release it a little bit sooner, something like American Sniper right now that has tons of, they could wait a year. And if that comes out to Netflix, people will still be like, I wanted to see this, you know, but this movie, I think they needed to release it and they knew that. And I'm sure they have much smarter people than us trying to figure out when to,
for sure,
you know, when's the best time to drop these things. Good movie.
Good movie.
Yeah. Of course, this week we were talking about post-apocalyptic societies, and this harkens back to...
And fascism.
And fascism. One of the long-lost, I think, sci-fi movies of this genre from, again, back when we were, like, probably just finishing up high school.
Yep.
Starting college. Equilibrium.
Equilibrium.
So Equilibrium is basically features Batman and...
Which one?
The one from the Dark Knight Batman.
Okay.
And he's railing against...
And on the... on the James Bale scale, where would you put him?
He's very strongly on the Bale side of the James Bale scale.
Okay.
I mean, one would even say he's setting the upper limit.
Okay.
Well, given that, you know, there are a couple actors outside of the scale that don't even register.
Right.
He's at least still on the very tip of registering.
Gotcha.
On the scale.
Yep.
He's railing against a dystopian society in which Alfred from Gotham has his way and has like control over. He does.
Week.
Yeah.
Well, or Gotham 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Last episode we mentioned a Gotham guy.
I mean, you know, these are a couple movies that happened, you know, around that time, 10, 15 years ago.
Yep.
And we're seeing the fruit of that labor they put in being, you know, coming forth now with Gotham.
With Gotham, yeah. Yeah. So you got a Batman, you got an Alfred.
Got Batman and Alfred. You got Boromir.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, Ned Stark, if you will.
Ned Stark, Boromir.
Yeah.
Yeah. Much like Ned Stark, dead.
Done for.
Done for very quickly.
Yeah.
Just in time to let us know that he has a taste for poetry.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Yeats is good.
Yep. Although I imagine he probably called him Yeats, but I don't know. We'll never know that for sure.
He didn't pronounce it.
Yep.
So, and then you got that other lady from Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, what did she play in Lord of the Rings?
Rowan?
Something with a win.
Something win.
Something win. Eowyn?
Yeah. Eowyn?
Did she play Eowyn?
Yeah, she was in the horse people.
Did she kill the Lich King?
Seems about right.
Witch King.
The
leader of the
Nazgul.
The leader
of the Nazgul.
Mm-hmm.
The Ringwraiths.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's her.
So that's Eowyn.
Yep.
Yeah. And then Taye Diggs taking a break from modeling to smile his way through most of the movie.
Yeah, he just like, gosh, you wanna see a guy with a mouthful of teeth? He's got him.
He's got a lot of them.
Good looking teeth.
Yeah, I counted three rows actually. It's weird.
Yeah, it's like a shark.
Yeah, he reveals he smiles wide enough. You see the extra one, and then the whole time space continuum gets all thrown out of whack.
Yeah. Taye Diggs' smile can do that to you.
It's thrown a lot of people out of whack.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's, you know, look. We've all read 1984.
We have.
Or Brave New World, or both.
Yes.
All right. Let's just run down. Okay. If we were going to write Equilibrium,
mm-hmm.
and we had decided to just fill it with all the surface level
elements.
Things that you need
yeah.
in a post-apocalyptic world.
Yep.
Fascism, number one.
Fascism.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you need a talking head on a screen.
You need a big brother.
Yep. Yeah. Or in this case, father.
Father is what they call him.
Needs to be in some way paternalistic.
Right.
Like he needs to be talking down to you in some way.
You need some sort of drug to reduce the emotion
right.
in society.
Yep. Whether it's soma, mm-hmm. whether it's prosium.
Yep. You need a caste system of yep. some sort.
Yeah, there needs to be very clear delineations between who's got it and who doesn't.
Yeah, well, and where you fall in that spectrum, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you saw there in that scene where they're all sitting listening to Father
mm-hmm.
speak. Like, they're all separated, and then they all have different colored shirts to, mm-hmm. like, let you know what it is they do for a living.
Yep.
Basically.
Yep.
Right?
Got to make it very clear.
Yep. And then you need this. It's the working class sort of drone
mm-hmm.
Mentality, and that, I mean, that's Metropolis.
Yep. How about
Lang.
This one? How about this one? Kids in control.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's also like very 1984.
Yeah. Nothing tells you anything worse about a future society than that they decide to put little kids in charge.
Yes.
Of determining the fate of adults.
Right.
Yeah. Lots of solid colors. Very
drab colors.
Yeah, very, very Spartan rooms, very mm-hmm. Spartan existence.
I even thought, you know what? I even thought that the costumes were definitely inspired by Fahrenheit 451, the yep. Truffaut mm-hmm. version. And I even thought that the I've lost my thought, but the font of the titles
yep.
was, I thought, very Spartan, if yep. you will. I yep. mean, it's sans serif. There's not a serif to be found.
Yep, sans.
Yep, mm-hmm. and it's just block lettering. You know, this is the movie title. This is the actor.
Yep. Yeah. And then, of course, you need to have removed some part of humanity that people need to get back.
Yeah.
In this case, it's emotion.
Right. But it's a stand-in. It's a stand-in for really like anything. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, and it's really loosely defined, isn't it?
It is, because the people are still very clearly able to show emotion.
Yeah.
Although I have to say Christian Bale does a very good job. You see when he, at least, switches from not having emotion to having emotion.
To having emotion, and his attempt to hide it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's very clear. I've watched a lot of Star Trek.
Okay. I don't think anyone would contest that.
There's no contesting.
Yeah.
The Vulcans.
Yep.
Do their best. Their whole existence is about getting to this Zen existence of pure logic and no emotion.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep.
So, and there's 50 years of Star Trek to deal with this, because yep. One of the very first main characters was, you know, a Vulcan, right? Mm-hmm. And they've dealt a lot with it, and I think the thing that they do well mm-hmm. is that they've decided that it's not medically induced, it is self-imposed discipline.
Mm.
And so there are times when these characters show some emotion and can't help it.
Yeah.
This movie does not do that.
Yeah, it by its own definition, they should not be showing the emotions yeah. that they are. And like some people do it well, Christian Bale, his son, mm-hmm. you know, but the guy who plays, who is father, but,
right.
you know.
Even father's speeches are full of passion. Yeah. Aren't they? Everyone gets up and claps and cheers.
Yep, exactly. So yeah,
it's what emotions undermining its own premise.
Yeah.
I think you're right. I think it's what you and I, as dumb moviegoers, would go, oh, name three emotions. Oh, joy, love, happiness.
They can't feel.
Yeah.
They can't feel no more.
Yeah.
They can't enjoy art.
They can't. They're not allowed.
Let's not forget that, you know, their decision to remove feeling and art is to torch the Mona Lisa.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure most people would go, you know what makes me feel really emotional? The Mona Lisa.
Yeah. She's almost got a smirk.
the most expressive painting of a person ever made. This makes me feel emotion.
Yeah.
Like I just sit down and cry.
And can I ask you a question, Ed?
Please.
If your purpose in life is to destroy all art,
yeah, mm-hmm.
do you care whether it's real or not?
No. I completely... Why do they have to do authenticity?
Why is that even a thing?
Yeah, unless he was getting like a bonus, right? Like if he's just knocking off knockoffs, they don't give him like as much money. But like if he gets the real thing, it's worth a lot more. That makes sense to me. But I completely agree. It's like... Like they didn't need that little extra bit of
information. You know what it is? It's a movie trick.
Yeah.
It's for the dumb moviegoers to go, oh my God, they're destroying the Mona Lisa, the most prized, you know, painting of all time.
Yeah. And these guys have got some fancy technology.
Right.
Yeah. Yep. I agree.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. They read all these dystopian novels and movies and picked out elements, threw them into a bag and jumbled them all up,
yep.
and then just threw them on a screen.
Yeah. At some point in the movie, I got past that. Like, I just accepted it.
Yeah.
I'm like, you know what? fine.
I actually would say that I got past that relatively early on.
Yeah.
I still recognized everything.
Yeah.
But it didn't stop my enjoyment of the film.
Yeah.
I think there are other things that stopped my enjoyment of the film.
Right. Well, it became a, for me, it did eventually become about him.
Yes.
You know? And you kind of removed, it became, again, to use the buzzword of the day, became more surreal. I actually feel like the other actors in this movie, other than his son and Emily Watson, I think is the actress's name.
I think that's right.
They did a good job, I think. But like the antagonists in this,
the antagonists were terrible.
And I think they ruined it a bit for them.
Let's allow two things. Let's allow that father has emotion because he's father. Right. Okay. Let's allow that the guy who is the puppet master
keeps his emotions
because he understands. I mean, when that final scene is done in a very lavish hall with paintings and whatever. So it's we'll allow him his emotions.
Yeah.
Taye Diggs doesn't get emotions.
No. Taye Diggs. You know who would have been great in place of Taye Diggs?
Boromir.
No, did you see did you ever see the Firefly TV show or the movie Serenity?
Yes.
The Bounty Hunter.
Yes.
That guy would have been he played this character, what this character should have been.
Yeah.
Didn't
somebody famous play him?
I think so, but
look it up, because I have an idea of who it is, but I don't know for sure. But yes, he overplayed his hand, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
He was jealous.
Yep.
He was vengeful.
Yep.
He was spiteful.
Yep.
Like all of these negative emotions.
He was full of a lot of things.
Yeah. He was very full. Emotionful. Yeah, weird. So we have all these problems with this movie.
Yeah.
I still kind of was okay. It's not like the worst thing I've ever seen.
No, yeah, it had enough going for it that it made it tolerable to watch it.
Well, and even those elements, those are all things I like about other properties.
Yeah. The gun kata was a bit much. It's the perfectly designed movements to whatever.
Meanwhile, you're standing in the center of a bunch of guys who are pointing their weapons.
Well, that's always the worst. Right? So the worst thing about this is true in all of these movies. This goes for comic book movies. This goes for, you know, sci-fi movies. This goes for any of these. There's always these badass guys, right?
Yes.
Like in this case, they're a class of trained person. The Grammaton cleric,
mm-hmm.
and their job is to just be trained to be these insane assassins. And yet they still, as a society, when they have a situation, will send in a bunch of these, you know, rubes who are not well trained, who are covered in body armor and have automatic weapons to just get mowed down. And then mm-hmm. Christian Bale will walk in all zen-like and just go in and destroy everybody. And you're like, why didn't you just bring that guy in the first place?
Right. It would have been so much easier.
Yeah. Like you walk into a knife fight and you got a bazooka in your back pocket, but you decide to swing at him with the knife a few times before you, you'd bring the bazooka out.
Right.
It just doesn't make any sense. So that's a little silly and I don't know. I did enjoy some of the scenes with him. I enjoyed the dog scene when he was, you know, when he didn't want to kill the dogs.
Yeah. It was a good scene to represent what was going on with him.
Mm-hmm.
But it was also, I felt like it was a little bit stylistically out of place for the rest of the movie.
Mm.
Which I guess is kind of the point.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, like, it was almost funny.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, there was a little bit of that. Well, it's because I don't know if that's not entirely, unintentional though, right? Is that like, oh, this big bad dude, this little dog is what makes him, you know, he's murdered people like relentlessly,
right?
And like it's the little dog that is keeping him from, yeah, it's almost, I don't know how much of that was actually intentional or not. But did this movie remind you of Blade Runner at all, or like the movie, it reminded me of an 80s sci-fi movie. Like I feel like it not Blade Runner in the sense that, like, it was good, but just, like, stylistically, it felt like from a different era. Like, if you watch this movie and you didn't know Christian Bale and, like, the years he occupied,
right?
I would have told you, if you just said, when was this movie made, I'd be like, oh, it's made in, like, the late 80s.
I thought it was more reminiscent of Fahrenheit 451 to me, so I placed it a little bit earlier than Blade Runner. Okay. But really, that's within about a 10-year span of each other.
Yeah.
So, I looked up The Bounty Hunter. It was not who I was thinking of. There's another character that I was thinking of from a different episode.
Okay.
And or the movie. Okay. But now that I'm reminded of The Bounty Hunter, mm-hmm. you're dead on.
Yeah. Well, that was entirely his thing. It was like an honor among similar people. Like he had like respect for who he was, like,
yes,
you know, but that's actually, I mean, that's sort of what the in the world of Firefly, that's what's happening too, is they're creating these like senseless like assassin machines, you know,
right?
And I just, yeah, I mean, this casting director, way to go getting Christian Bale, way to go, you know, getting Sean Bean. Did you just run out of money and you're like, you know who we need? Taye Diggs. Let's give Taye Diggs a shot at this.
You know what? It's not even his fault, because he's just doing what he does.
Yeah.
Like that sort of like super cool, you know, like, I don't know. I mean, so he used to be on a show called Private Practice.
Yep.
Well, there was a writer's strike right around the time that show came on,
okay.
which meant that all the shows that I was normally watching were no longer available.
Okay.
And so I, for a short time, watched Private Practice. Mm-hmm. That's my excuse, and I'll stay with it.
All right, it's fine. No judgment here.
Yeah, for like about a season and a half, I watched Private Practice. He was on that show. He was really good. He was this cool guy, and he had, you know, he exuded coolness and whatever. He does that in this movie as well.
But that's not what's called for.
But that's not what it's called for.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't think it's a matter of like of he didn't have the talent. It's that he didn't have the right thing.
Yeah.
So yeah.
He's closer to the James end of the spectrum.
Yes.
And they called upon him to do a role that he was not suited for.
No. Well, and he was opposite of a guy that's somewhere on the Bale side of the spectrum.
He's at least close to Christian Bale.
Close.
I mean, I don't think they ever definitively proved that Christian Bale was Batman in those movies, but, you know.
Yeah.
Batman's pretty close to Batman's the Christian Bale close. Side. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so this is the second time I've seen this film.
Me too.
The first time was not long after it came out.
Right.
Yeah. I believe we watched it together.
I probably.
Yeah. That's not relevant. I had better memories of it
mm-hmm.
than what I do now. I think part of that is I know film history a little bit better.
Mm.
So I recognize many more things.
Mm.
And dystopian literature. I've read mm-hmm. more of that. Yeah, I wouldn't recommend against this movie.
No, me either.
I wouldn't say don't watch this movie.
Right.
But I wouldn't put it on a list of movies to watch.
If it's on TV, don't feel like you need to turn it off.
Yep.
But don't seek it out.
Yep.
I actually misremembered an entire scene in this movie. I think I confused it with the scene from The Phantom Menace where they're fighting Darth Maul in the hallway, like near the end of the movie.
Yeah.
Where they're like chasing him down the hall with the lightsabers and fighting. For some reason, I thought there was this like epic battle between Taye Diggs, what is his name, Augustin McFadden, or whoever plays the guy who's actually father.
Yeah.
And Christian Bale. And I thought for some reason they were like fighting like karate style with like sticks and stuff all the way down a hallway, and that did not happen in this movie at all.
They hinted at it.
Yeah, there was a scene where like in the throne room where he fights a bunch of guys.
Right.
Stabs them all and stuff.
Well, and even they had the kendo stick.
Yeah.
They're not kendo sticks, but
yeah.
Something akin to that.
Where they were fighting with those. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it was, but it was not at all what I just remember. I remembered it, there being more epic fight scenes in this than there really were, which yes. probably tells you something about my mentality when I first time I saw this movie.
Yeah.
This was right around the time when, like, The Matrix was coming out, and, like, these yep. types of movies were cool.
This was just a couple of years after The Matrix.
Yeah, like, the cool, surreal fight scenes were, like stylistically okay. Like, you're like, oh, okay, cool. The gun kata with him just like his arms just moving and him being in the same spot, you know, like yeah. didn't look as silly as it did in this time when I watched
definitely,
it.
Well, it definitely feels out of place for the rest of the movie too.
Yeah.
Like that.
It was
that
like cartoony.
Was, yeah, it was weird. And they used this like sound.
Yeah.
It was very, very stuck. It stuck out a lot.
Yeah.
It very stuck out.
All of that aside, I'm going to practice gun katas. Like regularly, I think
you should.
Yeah,
I think it's the right thing to
do. It's the most efficient way to protect yourself.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's been honed over hundreds of years, thousands of gun battles.
Yeah,
you know, by a computer.
Yeah, the computer figured out the best. I love the like the little like training video or like explanation video with mm-hmm. like the little graphics explaining it.
Can I, in defense of this not having an epic final battle scene?
Hmm.
I think that more movies should end this way. Don't you?
With a guy's
you?
Face getting cut off? Absolutely.
Yeah, well, there's that.
Did you notice the scene from above where you can see his face on the floor?
No, I didn't notice that. That's amazing.
There's a weird, just quick, like, bird's eye view of the whole scene. And if you look real close, you see, like, a face on the floor by Christian Bale's foot.
That's awesome.
And you're like, wow, it's intact. And it's just, like, looks like it's coming out of the floor. Anyway, sorry, I didn't mean to derail you, but...
Well, if you truly have this guy who's so much more powerful than the other guy,
yeah.
the fight should end that quickly.
It should.
And I actually really appreciate that about yeah. this fight scene.
Well, it's like in Indiana Jones when he just shoots the guy.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Like, that's what would really happen. I remember my dad watching that movie and being like, yes! Because he's seen yeah. so many movies where he's just like, that guy's got a gun, and, you know, that guy doesn't, you know? Yeah. As I get older, I start thinking that, too. I go like... Well, he's just kicked the crap out of everybody else so far, so why wouldn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also felt like Taye Diggs' character, you kept thinking he was done. He was gone.
Yeah.
And they kept bringing him back, and I felt like it was weak.
Yeah.
You know, I was just, he's back again.
That's probably the worst thing about this movie is just that it was like almost there.
Yeah.
I think it was just almost
I think that's why I can't say it's a bad movie.
Yeah, you can't, like, wholeheartedly, you know, two thumbs down, you know, whatever. But, yeah, I think it was real close. Yeah. It had, like, half the pieces it needed. And if you tweaked a few things, maybe mm-hmm. did some cast, changed a couple of cast members.
Maybe
this could
be a little more original.
Yeah, this could be on par with, like, something like Blade Runner.
And I think so.
People would be watching it now. And, you know, who knows, maybe in 5-10 years, someone will uncover it and you know, it'll become, like, a little cult favorite. But probably not for the reasons it intended.
Right, absolutely. I don't know. Yeah. It's there. It's there. You know, I have no feeling about this movie.
Well, that's actually probably the worst thing you could say about it then, because I think it's trying to actually get you to have it. So, well, it really didn't succeed then in that case. All right. Well, good discussion, Dean.
I think we had a lot to say about both of those movies.
We did indeed.
This is probably a real long episode.
Long-ish.
Okay. Well,
you haven't been as long-winded as you usually are. So.
Oh, that's a fair point. Look, just if you got to the end, you know, now
congrats.
What do you do?
Yeah. Well, I mean, they could let us know what they thought of it, you know? Maybe we missed some stuff. They could just come in and say, hey, what about this thing? Did you ever think about how this related to that, that related to this, and that brings it all back to that other thing? And then all of a sudden, boom, head explodes. Like you're in a David Cronenberg movie.
Oh, well, we haven't talked to any about any of those yet.
We should.
Yeah, we will.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Well, Tim's letting us know that it's time to wrap up.
Jeez, Tim.
Although, sometimes I feel like he's saving us a little bit, you know what
I mean?
A little
bit. He's like, come on, guys. I got to get to my homework.
Let's rein it in. All right, well, I've been Ed.
And I'm always Dean.
And together we're Prime Flicks, the podcast. So, If you like what you hear here, go to primeflixpod.com, listen to more, and until next time, we'll see you on the internet.